Here we go. Good morning, everyone, and welcome to Liberty Talk Radio, America's libertarian voice and independent streaming internet radio station, broadcasting 24 hours a day, 7 days a week from our studio in Tulsa, Oklahoma to around the world. I'm your host, Joe Cristiano, and this is your antidote to popular talk radio. This broadcast is being brought to you live on Thursday morning, September 25th, 2008. It is now about 6:35 a.m. Central Daylight Time. We're running 5 minutes late this morning, by the way, folks. Folks, it's time for us to take back control of our government now before this bureaucratic, oversized, and self-serving federal government starves us our property, our freedom, our rights, and our liberty. To do this, we must shed conventional thinking regarding our political structure. We need to be revolutionaries in thought, dissidents in action. Only after we recognize what our government is doing to our freedom and our Constitution will we start taking it back. And this program is just about that. Well, good morning, everyone. During our live broadcast, we invite you to call 646-652-4620 or email us at comments@libertytalkradio.com. If you are listening to a rebroadcast, you may also phone in your comments to area code 918-919-0101. I also encourage you to get educated on economic issues. Go to Andy Sutton's website, mytwocentsonline.com. That's mytwocentsonline.com, and that two is a numeric two. He discusses economic issues and how they affect you. I would also like to remind our listeners to subscribe to our reminder service by visiting our website and clicking on the subscribe icon. Well, good morning, everyone. I'm running about 5 minutes late this morning. I apologize. I had a little technical difficulty in my head. It didn't work. I didn't work function properly today. And maybe I'm still a little bit unnerved because I was a little fender bender yesterday. And it was a small fender bender pushed in a side panel to a car, unfortunately, backing up in a bank parking lot. But the unfortunate part is I was driving my brother-in-law's pickup truck. Now, that was not pretty. It's an old truck, but, and he had practically no damage whatsoever, just a little bit of a scrape. But, boy, did I feel badly, and you don't want to get family on the wrong side of things on you, you know. So, anyway, so I was unnerved all day yesterday, and now here I am back on the air. I'm going to see if I can put myself together. We are going to talk about how we are misled by comments that we have been led, I guess, or we—I shouldn't say led, but we are fed when we're very young, and we repeat these, and after a while, they become gospel. That's a real problem. There's some things that become, it's almost like a religion. If I don't care what religion you're in, the religious leaders always want to see, you know, the very young people get involved in the religious program, because at that point, their minds are most malleable, and they can, you know, obviously, there's less resistance to acceptance. Now, let me put it that way, okay? And I don't mean to be down on religion or anything like that, although I think that religion, you know, has caused probably more harm than good during the time that man has been on the face of this earth. Unfortunately, I'm a little bit concerned about how religion is used in the world, etc. I mean, if people are spiritual and religious, I think that's wonderful. I mean, continue doing it. Don't let me dissuade you at all. But I do have problems with the way we go about doing this. Now, folks, we have only 20 minutes left in this program. I would love to have one of my listeners call in, 646-652-4620. Now, if you're listening to a rebroadcast, 918-919-0101, and please leave a message, or you can send me comments at any time to comments@libertytalkradio.com. Okay, now let me give you an example. This morning I was listening to Jack Welch on CNBC News, and I could only listen to to CNBC News for a short period of time. Now, Jack Welch is interesting. He's an interesting guy, but you have to keep in mind that He was CEO of GE during some really good times when the stock market was actually skyrocketing. And I venture to say that if he was CEO of GE today, he wouldn't be the superstar that he is today. I think he rode a very, very high wave. I'm not saying he's incompetent or anything like that. I'm just saying that guy's timing was impeccable. Not only that, but he got out at the right time also. So now he's a very sought-after person, being very, very successful, one of the largest corporations in the world. But all right, enough of that. Here's my point. He's talking about Ben Bernanke, the Federal Reserve Chairman, and Hank Paulson, who's the Secretary Treasurer, of the United States. And he's talking about how brilliant these guys are, you know, how damn smart they are, and how we should applaud the fact that we have these people at the helm during this tumultuous financial crisis. Now, I can't argue with that. I can't argue with that at all. I think they probably are very, very brilliant men. And I think that they are probably the right men for the type of job that they have and all that. I'm not critiquing that. But let me say this. We hear that. We get the self-assurance that everything seems to be okay. Well, folks, things are not okay. When we say these guys are smart, they are smart. But let me add something. We need to look at the other side of the coin. These guys are smart who have done some really dumb, dumb things. You know, a gal that I used to work with, this is many, many years ago, her husband went crazy, threw out a house. This girl's a wonderful gal. I mean, this guy was wrong. In fact, she wound up leaving him because he was running around with some other girl. Anyway, threw out a house. Oh, she was upset. He wouldn't even let her see the kids. I mean, it was horrible. And this guy was a brilliant guy, you know. I mean, a big job, you know, really a big wig in town, the whole bit. And, and she said, you know, he really is a good man. She was crying in my office. She worked for me this many years ago. And she was crying in my office. She says, but he's really a good man. And I looked at her and I said, yeah, he's a good man who does a lot of bad things. And she looked at me and she said, you know, she just looked at me and she, and ever since that, she said, you know, you've always given me sage advice. And I say the same thing here. We need some sage advice. Now, I may not be the person to give that to you, but I dislike all of these comments that we hear, you know. Here's another one that we get on TV. There's an organization called DividedWeFail.org. Now, no, that's not true. Divided, we heal. We don't fail. You see, when we are divided, that means legislation does not get passed. When legislation does not get passed, that was the exact intention of our forefathers. They did not want legislation to be coming out, you know, on an assembly line, because they knew every time some legislation came out, that meant restrictions, that meant taxation, that meant more legislation, larger government. They knew, they understood what that meant. And they wanted a house divided. That's why we have an executive branch, we have a executive branch, a legislative branch, and a judicial branch. And even the legislative branch is broken up to two, into the House, where they're supposed to be the commoners, supposed to be serving, and then the senators for the state. I mean, there's supposed to be this tension between those two, and sometimes there is. Now, when Clinton was in office, he had a Republican Congress, and he was a Democrat president. And people said, well, what a wonderful president he was. Well, I don't know how wonderful he was. I have no way of gauging it. I'll be honest with you. You know, he probably wasn't a bad president or anything like that. But one reason why things didn't get through is because the Republicans wouldn't let him. So things just cooked along beautifully. Understand that. So that's another one. You know, people talk about the presidential job being the toughest job in the world. Sorry, it's the easiest job in the world. Because the president has no power whatsoever. The president is powerless. He's a figurehead in the United States. We are the presidents. We are the governors. It's a government for, of, and by the people. Now remember, no one could read our Constitution without concluding that the people who wrote it wanted their government severely limited. The words no and not employed in restraint of government power occur 24 times in the first 7 articles of the Constitution and 22 more times in the Bill of Rights. Now, the guy who wrote that was Edmund Opitz, and I always keep this on my computer, and I read it very often. Understand that if you are the president and someone comes in and advises you, one of your advisors, which you shouldn't even, don't even need, by the way, and you can reduce the size of the government by $1 billion just by getting rid of the White House and just have them stay there and, you know, keep them happy, you know, give them breakfast, take them for a walk during the day, and then tell them to go home. And that's all he needs to do. He needs, the only job the president has, and that is to ensure that the legislature does not impinge upon the liberty, the rights, and the inalienable rights and the freedom of the people. If they have any legislation that says we're going to do this and do that and do this, and he says no. That's when he goes home. That's the end of that. I mean, it's that simple, folks. You know, the president of the United States first, when the United States was a young country, the president of the United States usually used to leave the White House and sit on the sidewalk, on the bench, just sit there. People would sit there and talk to him. He had nothing to do, and rightfully so. He doesn't have anything to do. And don't give me the smart-ass answer. Don't give me a smart-ass answer that says, well, you know, today is a complex world. This complex world, we need someone who is very intuitive and someone who understands the international implications of everything that they do. Bull! Garbage! Absolute garbage! In fact, I can argue the reverse. Because it's a complex world that we live in, what we should be doing is absolutely nothing. Absolutely nothing. So you're the president, you get advised that one country is invading another country, bombed another country, blah, blah, blah. And the advisor asks the quintessential question, what should we do, Mr. President? The answer should be, how about, what time is it? 10 o'clock? How about brunch? How about brunch? You know, the states in the United States are sovereign. That means that they rule themselves. They are sovereign. The government of the United States is not sovereign. The states trump the federal government, with the one exception. That's if they violate the Constitution, because they bought into that. In other words, if they said it right now, all Irish are going to be slaves in our state or something like that, well, you know, that would be unconstitutional. They're going to have to get the hell out. You know, there is now movements in certain states like Vermont where people are actually thinking about secession from the United States. You know, one time people wanted to become part of the United States. Now states are thinking about seceding from the United States. And you know, they have the right to do so. They're only part of the United States under agreement. They can say, don't like the agreement anymore. Contract expired. Here's my 30-day notice. I'm out of here. And I wouldn't blame them. All right, let's go to a few others. There are no atheists in foxholes. Now, I've heard that ever since I was a kid. I can't tell you how young I was. And of course, when I went to church every Sunday and I went to church during the week and all this other stuff, I heard that and, you know, blah, blah, blah. You know, and then I learned that's that's garbage. That's not true. There are many atheists in foxholes, and they don't call for a higher power during hard times, and they die just as valiantly, and they fight just as valiantly as anyone else, if not more so. There are atheists in foxholes, and there are plenty of them. In fact, you know, that was told to me, not recently, but a few years ago, by my next door neighbor. I never forget that he mentioned that. And it really bothered me. I said, how does he know that? How does he know there are no atheists in foxholes? You know why? Because he learned that when he was a kid. Let's go on to a few more. I have a listing here. You know, John McCain said something the other day. He said, greed is okay. He said, but unrestrained greed is not. Now, at that point, my head started to shake. You know, I started doing something like, I didn't know what to do. I had no idea what he's talking about. And what is truly disconcerting is the fact that he has no idea what he's talking about. I mean, what is greed? Greed is sort of you do something that's to your benefit. Guess what, folks? We all do that. Now, I know there's that movie with, what's his name? What's that movie star? I forgot the name. I'm sorry. But, you know, greed is good type thing. But they make it seem like greed is a certain attribute. No, we all do things that are to our best interest. When we go to the store, we want to buy a suit, we buy the suit that we think fits us the best, puts us in the best light in front of other people. Isn't that greed? It's for us. Me. I'm not buying a suit and saying, well, I think other people would like this suit better. I mean, we do everything that way. We fix our houses, our rooms, the little stupid things we do is all for us to make our world, our small little stupid little world that we have. And I have a stupid little world too, like everybody else. And, you know, that can be construed as greed. Now, how is unconstrained greed? At what point does that become unrestrained greed? I mean, I don't understand that. If I have a company and I was making $1 million a year with my company, and then all of a sudden I made $2 million, unrestrained, legislation, let's put this guy behind bars, let's take the rest of the money. You know, but let's assume that I did. Would I take that $1 million? What would I do? Do something bad with it? No, I'd reinvest it. I may even give it to charity. You know, I don't understand that concept. Greed is just is a word, and there's really no true definition of greed, and we can't define it, truly define it. It's a very, very difficult thing to define because it's embedded within each one of us because we're all looking out for our own best interest. I like when politicians talk about the speculators in the marketplace. This I love. This is another comment that we hear all the time. And then we repeat it because I talk politics a lot on the outside. When I'm not talking on the radio, I talk with other people about issues. Not so much politics, but issues. And you hear this.
Well, you know, we have to do something about the speculators.
You know, it's like going to the president and saying, well, what are we going to do about this country? This country has invaded that country. What are we going to do?
Got lunch. What else is there to do?
And people say, well, speculators, we got speculators out there. Well, isn't everyone a speculator? I'm a speculator. I speculate that when I buy a stock, General Electric, for example, I speculate it's going to go up. If I short the stock, I speculate it's going to go down. Everyone in the market's a speculator. And then what I'd like to ask these clowns, and I really think they're a bunch of clowns. We have to look at them as a bunch of clowns or else they'll drive us nuts. Is raise your hand and say, excuse me, Mr. Obama, McCain, whoever you are, or even news broadcaster, use its regulators the cause of this oil increase. Could you please, on that board behind you, in Dick and Jane language, could you just do me a favor and I'll pay you for it, you know? Explain to me how that happens. I'll bet not one person in 1,000 can do that. Hold on 1 second. We have a caller. Good morning, caller. Your first name and where you're calling from?
This is Jim, Tulsa, Oklahoma.
Oh, Jim. Hi. Good morning. Thank you for listening in. Do you have a comment or a question?
Yes, Joe. I'm appalled at the recent string of bailouts that the Feds have been offering Freddie, Fannie, AGI, now this new $700 financial industry. I was wondering, you can argue the necessity, the right or wrongs of it, but if you were to speak to someone on the street about the constitutionality or lack of, so what would be a simple way to describe, to explain how this action is unconstitutional?
Well, Jim, I like to answer that in a very flippant manner, in that our entire monetary system is unconstitutional. You know, so it's like, you know, building a house of ill repute, if you will, you know, hiring all the girls, you know, doing every, and even getting a license to do so, and then say, oh, look how terrible it is. I mean, you know, we built it. We built the house exactly. We built the house, and we're getting exactly what the house does, all right? If you build a factory that runs on inexpensive, high-sulfur coal, you know, you're going to get a lot of pollution. We have monetary pollution, Jim, and we are getting exactly what people have been saying. Now, the John Birch Society, I mean, one society I think is kind of radical in my book, but they make a lot of sense on many monetary issues. Now, they've been screaming about this for 40 years. This is nothing new. So we have an unconstitutional monetary system that we knew eventually had to collapse if you understand how it works, and now it's collapsing. You know, what we're doing is pouring more fuel on the fire. Yeah.
Well, again, it's as you know, it's a detailed and complex issue, but it seems to be obviously the talk of the town that's on everyone's mind, and I'm just trying to find a succinct and simple way to express that point of view.
Yeah, I think if you speak to the man on the street, that's not going to be possible. Because you have belief systems and, you know, the dollar's good as gold. You know, I'm all American. We have to stand up. We have to support the government. We got to do this. We got to do that. You know, all of this garbage, this toxic garbage that we're fed and led to believe. And our minds today, American minds are so contaminated, Jim. There is absolutely no way that you can speak to a contaminated mind. It's like looking through a cesspool and saying, now, let's see, if I put the straw in the corner, maybe I won't drink any garbage. I mean, it's not going to happen. I don't know, Jim. I'm as frustrated as you are. Now, I can be radical and say, maybe the best thing that we can do is to allow the entire system to collapse.
Yeah.
And then start from scratch. And then say... I'm sorry, get Jim.
I was going to say, when the logic for doing this is that the alternative is worse, you know, how do we know that and prove it?
So, yeah, I mean, where are we going? After we bail these people out, where is my guarantee? And I want a guarantee in writing that this won't happen again. And that we will be on firm footing. Now, this is programs about the things that we say and what they mean. If they say, well, we will be on firm footing and the economy will be whatever resilient means. I don't know what that means, and I don't know. Resilient means that when I go out and I buy something, I made the right decision. That's what the economy means. And whether I decide not to buy something, also, that's an economic decision. I am the economy. You are the economy. But if they can give me a guarantee in saying this will never happen again, and if it does, we're going to give you $2 million in gold, you know, I'd say, I'll buy it. I mean, give me something of value. I'll buy you a new Cadillac, you know, a new SUV or something like that. Give me a guarantee. They can't do that. But I can tell you this, if you had an honest monetary system as we had before 1964 without coinage, then you could have guaranteed that.
Well, Joe, I know you're passionate about these issues. Enjoy listening to your show. Keep up the good work. I'll cut off now. Thanks.
Thank you, Jim, for calling in. Bye-bye. Well, wow. Thank you, Jim, for calling in. Boy, I got me started. Well, we were talking about greed, speculators. And I'll bet you these characters cannot explain what a speculator does. And then they preach this constantly. Speculators not bad. Speculators are good. They ameliorate the ups and downs of the marketplace. You know, I had a few others here. A guy called into a radio station that I was listening to, and I'm not sure which one it was, and it may have been NPR. I'm not sure. And he said that he was concerned that. He was an African American, and he was concerned that Obama would not win the presidential election because of prejudice. He felt that there were many people who were not going to vote for Obama because he was, in fact, a black person. Now, I about went through the roof. I mean, I really should not do this. Folks, I should be on an island somewhere. I should be somewhere where it's goodbye city. Let me give you a station break. I haven't done that in 20 minutes. This is Liberty Talk Radio. I'm Joe Cristiano, your host. You can call in at 646-652-4620. If you're listening to a rebroadcast, 918-919-0101, or comments at libertytalkradio.com. Thank you. And please do send your comments, especially if you disagree. But be respectful and give me the logic behind your comments, and then we'll discuss it. Be more than happy to do that. And by the way, I have been wrong in my life. I'm not perfect. I remember making a mistake in 1952, but I corrected it immediately. You understand what I mean. Okay. And I really wish we would learn from one another instead of being idiots. And we just talk like idiots sometimes. We all do. You know, we all have to watch that. But this person called in and said, well, they didn't feel that Obama was going to win because of prejudice. I said, well, that's really nice, you know. Think about that comment for a second. How many people are voting for him because, only because, he's a black person? Now, if you're going to take discount those that are not voting for them, or count those that are voting for him, not voting for him because he's a black person, then you must discount those people who are voting for him solely because he is a black person. Aha. Now the equation, now we have two sides of the coin. And folks, this is what's really bothering me about discussions of the issues and what we call politics, which is not, which even that term bothers me. Say, oh, I don't talk politics. I have no idea what they're talking about. You say, well, what about the economy? Oh, it's politics. You know, it drives me nuts. Even that term is a misnomer. So we have these terms, and then we hang on to them, and this is the way we make our decision. I'm not certain how we can ever resolve any issue, provided that we're hanging on to definitions that have absolutely no basis, and we can't even define. I mean, it's almost very, very hopeless. I have another one here. Let's see. Oh, I hate to bring this up because I'm bringing Obama in twice. Because, I mean, McCain is in the same book, as far as I'm concerned, if not worse than Obama. But Obama writes a book, The Audacity of Hope. What the heck does audacity mean? Well, in the Merriam-Webster Dictionary, it means intrepid boldness, bold or arrogant, disregard of normal constraints. Even knowing that, what does that mean? Now let me give you the other side of the coin. Hope is when you sit around and do nothing and wait for someone else to do it for you, in the hope that it would benefit you. Doesn't that sound pretty good, doesn't it? I like for one of my listeners to refute that. Hope is doing nothing. You don't need hope. You need action. And this is what he's saying. He's saying, don't do anything. I'm here. This is the subliminal message, by the way. I'm your savior. You just need vote for me, and everything will be fine. Well, folks, that is dangerous. That's what Hitler said. But this is what our elected officials, all our elective officials say. The audacity of hope. You know, he had audacity. The only audacity there is that he would write a book that was so stupid. Anyway. Before I get started on that. Okay, folks. This is the end of today's broadcast. We'd like to thank Rent Shakers Audiology for their financial support, and we'd like to thank you for listening in. You can further the cause of liberty by recommending this program to your friends and let us hear from you. Our email address is comments@libertytalkradio.com. Remember, you are either allowing your liberties to be taken away or you're striving to protect them. Unfortunately, there is no middle ground. Folks, freedom is like riding a motorcycle. You feel free, liberated. Your life is in your own hands. But with that freedom comes responsibility and risk. That's the free life. Folks, embrace it. That's what America's all about. But the government is like training wheels. You never get to experience it. And it ain't no fun. Ron Paul has a sign on his desk that says, "Don't steal! The government hates competition!" With that, until next time, I'm Joe Cristiano. This is Liberty Talk Radio. Stay well. Stay tuned.